Hey, this is Casual Wednesdays. I'm Jared Jones. You know, everyone says that it's so easy to take things for granted, and in comics, I found that sentiment to be 100% true. Case in point, creator runs. They don't seem to last near as long as they used to. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, and it felt like Roger Stern had always written action comics. But no, just under 100 issues, or 6 years, or however you want to look at it. You know, maybe Roger Stern isn't the best example of this. One run I'd certainly taken for granted in the last few years was from Tim Seeley. Not on any one book, but on one character. Dick Grayson. Nightwing. Creator runs don't last forever, but in Tim's case, I kinda hoped it would. From the days of Grayson, when the world thought Nightwing was dead and Dick had become this sexy secret agent man, when Seeley was collaborating with some guy named Tom King, to the current Nightwing run in the era of Rebirth, Tim Seeley provided a voice to Dick that I felt was completely fitting to the character. He was confident, funny, cavalier, and driven, but he wasn't crazy. This wasn't a Batman book I was reading after all, and I felt that Tim understood that distinction. There would always be a bit of the colorful, whirling dervish inside of Dick. He would always be a little, well, Robin.
I mean, for me, I think, you know, it goes back so long, because the original idea, you know, Batman, I think, is what appealed to me and got me into comics and stuff, but I think it was Robin that kept me there.
That's Tim.
And then, you know, the younger characters like Spider-Man, which come from Robin, that kept me into superhero comics, I think, when I was, you know, really young. Because I think it was always designed for that. I mean, Robin is the reader's point of view character. So you wish you could hang out with Batman. You don't want to be Batman, because Batman's life is miserable, but you could be Robin. You could be the guy that hangs out with him. And so I think that, you know, aspect of the character is so important, and it worked on me.
What made Grayson work as well as it did was that Seeley and King put a new spin on a classic character that had already undergone an identity crisis. In Grayson, Dick Grayson was Nightwing, was Agent 37, was Robin. It showed how Dick's personality wasn't defined by which mask he wore, or in Grayson's case, which conspicuously snug outfit he wore. He remained Dick. It was an effective deconstruction of the character without betraying his core concepts. Dick Grayson had arrived as his own character.
So for us, it was a story of, all right, let's take away the family. So now this guy who's used to being this respected elder brother who, you know, she kind of helps train us these people in and acts as a go-between between the senior cranky Batman and these young kids who emulate, you know, him and join the story. So him without that kind of relationship with anyone, without that kind of storyline, he has to do new things, you know? So that's what Grayson was intended to be. Let's take the family man out of the family. This was a way to do that and maintain the soul of the character and what's important about him and his personality, but just put him in a new situation to get a new and different story.
But as much as Dick Grayson is very much his own man, his impact on the Batman mythos is just as important to the Caped Crusader as the night Bruce Wayne lost his parents. In fact, the entire function of Robin is to make Batman a better character overall, right? Here's Tim.
Because they've done a really good job of making each Robin a unique aspect of Batman, right? So Dick is the reflection. He's the guy who doesn't go too far, who keeps Batman from going too dark. But then the characters that came after are different. Jason is the part of Batman that tries to fix things. And Jason becomes interesting because Jason is the failed experiment. So that character sticks around because, again, reflects on a character that we all know and love, which is Batman, and makes Batman more interesting. Then Tim Drake is the analytical, the smart side of Batman, but he's relatively well-adjusted, right? He's not avenging anything. He's literally that part of us, especially since he came out in the 90s. He's that new generation wishing they could hang out with Batman. So Damian Wayne is just a completely unique character in that he is designed to be the Robin to Dick Grayson as Batman.
For Tim Seeley's favorite Robin, well,
I think overall Dick does, because of the way you could tell Batman stories, with Dick Grayson being the lighter version of Batman, like the guy that has not been destroyed by the death of his parents, that makes worked great as a combo, like, but if Dick was Batman and Damian was Robin, that would be ideal. I think that would be, if I was going to just take over Batman, I would, and not that they let me do this, I would try for that, because I think the Dick Damian combo is one of the best stories in modern comic book reboots.
They were the best, Richard.
That's right.
Last week's issue of Detective Comics featuring Tim Drake's return to the Batman mythos as the third Robin, Damian Wayne running the show over in Teen Titans, and Super Sons showcasing the world's finest team of Robin and Superboy, Robin has never had it so good. And that's what we're going to talk about today. This week, Robin, the Teen Wonder. Then we'll share our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week, read listener comments towards the end, which might mean you, by the way, you never know, and assess Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica number 1, and Punisher the Platoon number 1. It's Wednesday, October 4th. Happy New Comic Book Day. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays. Robin's name. Are you ready to do this?
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Tim Drake.
Maps Mizuguchi.
That was not even at 3.
Oh, well.
And Maps. Maps isn't a Robin.
No, but she kind of is. She is in drawings that Carl Kreschel did.
I guess that counts.
It's going to be that way in my headcanon. Okay?
Oh, I see. That's fine. Yeah. Headcanon's always better than regular canon.
Yes.
Anyway, hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I am your host, Jared Jones, and with me, as always, is the Stephanie Brown to my Tim Drake. MJ Kramer. Hello, MJ.
Hi, that's a pretty apt comparison, actually.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
Except I'm not blonde. It's okay, though.
It's fine. You don't have to be blonde. Stephanie Brown transcends hair color.
Yeah.
She's a good person. So are you. So anyway, this week we are talking about Robin. Not the Boy Wonder, just the Wonder.
The other Caped Crusader.
The other Caped Crusader. I guess we came to this because we literally had nothing else to talk about this week.
Well, because it makes sense to do it this week because of A Lonely Place of Living just came out last week.
That's true. Tim Seeley is leaving Nightwing, the grown-up Robin book, which is sad for me because he was one of my favorite writers for that character. And now I have to get used to Sam Humphries, who's hopping over from Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
And Tim's going to hop over to that book. So I guess they swapped.
Just funny. Yeah, they're just doing a switcheroo.
Yeah, they're playing musical comics, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it's a heavy Robin week in terms of news. And he happens to be they. I should probably use non-gender specific pronouns here.
Uh-huh.
Because Robin has been all sorts of people throughout the years.
Yeah.
How long has Robin even been around for?
Since 1940.
I mean, Dick Grayson, I guess, had the longest tenure.
Definitely, yeah. I was looking some of it up, and he stopped being Robin, like, very early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jason Todd started in, like, 83, something like that.
Yeah, and didn't Jason Todd have, like, red hair for, like, a minute there?
Yes.
And then, like, he had a diet to look more like Dick.
But when they first brought him back as Red Hood,
yeah,
he still had his red hair for a bit.
That was the Morrison thing, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That was the one thing I liked about that Red Hood and the Outlaws book originally, is that they were all, it's like a redhead team.
Yeah, they were a team of gingers.
Yeah, and they were all kind of like redheaded stepchildren treated that way a little bit.
Like
so
that.
I do. But yeah, Dick had Dick wore the mantle, mm-hmm, for 1940 to 1980 something. That would be about 40-ish years.
Yeah, hopping around in, you know, little
in his little pixie boots.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Jason had it for about 5 years after that, until 1988 was, mm-hmm, when they did a Death in the Family.
Yeah.
Loyal readers voted for him to die brutally at the Joker's hand. Right. Pretty terrible.
He's a child.
Yeah.
Okay, so like everyone's got a problem with Damian Wayne right now.
I don't think they do. I don't think most people do.
When I talk about Damian with people, I hear more snorts of derision than I do with literally any other Robin.
I think that's more to do with the fact that he was introduced last, mm-hmm, and that they...
He usurped Tim Drake's...
Yes, and also that they have had to do a lot of jumping through hoops in order to make the continuity work now because there are so many Robins.
Well,
and so, like, remember in New 52, they had that thing where it was like Dick was only How long was Dick supposed to have been Robin?
In the New 52? a year or two, maybe?
And then Tim was supposed to have only been Red Robin?
Yeah, and in the New 52, he was only Red Robin.
Yeah, there's some weird, weird juggling going on to make all of that fit into the 5 years that had supposedly come beforehand.
And so, all of that just to make room for Damian.
Yeah. So I can see some people being annoyed at the continuity craziness that ensued because of him, but as a character, most people really like him.
Well, the reason I bring him up is because of the two, of all the Robins, those are the only two that died. Like, were killed off briefly. I mean, this is comics, you always come back.
You're forgetting somebody.
Who am I forgetting?
Miss Stephanie Brown.
Stephanie Brown. Oh my god, you're absolutely right. She was killed in her... What the hell is wrong with DC killing all these children as Robin? It's
like, what is wrong with Batman taking children into his battle against crime? That's the question.
You know what's so weird? I was talking to Tim Seeley for this episode. He was talking about how Robin's the point of view character. It's like you can't be Batman because Batman's miserable, but you can be Robin because he's like energetic and youthful and he's a fun character. And if Robin's a fun character, then why does DC always feel so compelled to murder them? I don't get it.
I don't know. It's their attempt to try and be more edgy like Marvel, like they always do. But it's funny because when I was reading up on the history of Robin, mm-hmm. Bill Finger mentioned that in his original intent in the character for the character of Robin was to give Batman more of like a Watson type character, just to have a character so Batman's not just talking to himself.
Well, I mean, it would be totally in character for Batman to talk to himself.
Yeah, but he just said that it got kind of boring, you know, co-writing the character and just having him talk to himself about his detective things. So he was like, well, he needs a Watson. And Bob Kane was like, why don't we have be a little kid? Because, you know, back then, comics were aimed at kids.
Yeah.
And little boys seeing Batman working with a little boy too. It was a really, really popular character, and they saw a huge sales spike on it.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, also, you know, Captain America also had Bucky, and
Marvel had Mary and
Billy.
Captain Marvel Jr.
Yeah.
Was it Billy?
Oh no, Billy is his name.
Billy's
no,
his
who's
name.
The other kid? Who's
Captain
other
Marvel
kid?
Jr. I thought.
No, but his name. There was Mary.
Hell,
and
I don't know. But that's fine.
I spent all my time researching Robins and not Marvel's.
Well, we'll do a Sidekicks episode eventually when we run out of ideas again. I always found that with Robin, Batman comics felt like there were added stakes to them. When it's just Batman, like it almost feels like, you know, everyone goes on about how DC's so mythical. Well, Batman never felt more mythical than when he's like, you know, prowling rooftops of Gotham by himself, because you know in the end of the story he's going to be perfectly fine. But if you put in a character that's kind of watching out for him, there's like this team dynamic, then it feels more grounded, even though we're still reading a story about two really garishly dressed people making really poor life decisions. But with Robin, when I was getting into comics, like Tim Drake was Robin. And Tim Drake, to me, was a really great intro character because he was analytical, but he was a kid still. Like he was like that smart kid in school that like got all these good grades, had a really great looking, you know, significant other. The teachers loved him. Kids hated him.
Did you identify with us,
Jared? I identified with a couple of those things. I didn't have a girlfriend back then. I didn't have a boyfriend. I didn't have anybody. Me and my stupid comics. But Tim Drake was really clever all the time. That's pretty much how he got the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like he deduced that.
He figured out that, that Bruce was the greatest, the world's greatest detective, Batman. Batman.
Well, I think if the world's greatest detective had his identity deduced by a teenager, I think that teenager is officially the world's greatest detective.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what he became. I mean, as his legend furthered, I mean, let's see, I'm thinking back. Like, Chuck Dixon wrote the first arc of Tim Drake's solo series.
Which was very popular at the time.
Oh, yeah, I read the show.
There were two of them or three of them?
There were three miniseries that came out before the ongoing. There was Robin when he went to, I think, Tokyo, and he like dealt with like King Snake, and that's how that character got introduced, I believe.
I remember seeing those holographic covers.
Well, that was three, I think. The Joker's Wild,
yeah.
When they had like the playing cards, but like with the holograms on, they were really hideous.
Yeah, I remember that.
But and then there was the second one, I think, which was called The Cry of the Huntress.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I may be misremembering, but the ongoing went on forever. I mean, Fabian Nicieza ended up writing this book, and Freddie Williams was illustrating it.
Bill Willingham was writing it for a bit, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah. I mean, like, even though all these, you know, different creative teams took on the character, the essence of Tim, like, somehow survived it. Like, it's so crazy to believe that Tim Drake was Robin for almost 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 91 is when they said he debuted, I think.
89.
I think 91 is when his first mini came out then.
Yeah, that's definitely true, because in 90, I think in November of 90, he got his, like, costume, like his, like, iconic 90s costume.
Okay.
You know, with the sharp looking R and, like, the short sleeves with the what were they, pockets?
Did he have pockets in his shirt? I don't know. Probably it was the 90s. Everybody had pockets everywhere.
And patches and stuff. I think Neil Adams designed the costume, but Norm Breyfogle made it sing. Like,
yeah.
I'll never forget that splash page where Tim Drake's like, you know, I'm going to be Robin for you, Batman, but, like, I gotta be my own Robin. I can't dress like Jason. I can't dress like Dick. I'm not those guys. And that's another thing about Tim that's so great, is that he was an individual. Jason Todd was a total carbon copy of Dick Grayson until they mucked with his personality.
Well, they gave him a personality.
Well, they gave him a shitty personality. Yeah. They're like, let's make him an asshole. Let's see how that pans out.
I don't hate what they've done with Jason in the past 10 years or so since he got brought back in Under the Red Hood storyline.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. They had to do the whole anti-hero thing with him because, of course, it's modern times, that's what the people want. But I think they've done some fun stuff with him, and I enjoy the fact that Batman now has this brood.
Like, he does have a brood.
It's like all the Batman family, it really is, because he's got all these kiddos running around who were Robins or are Robins, and it makes for a really fun dynamic. Like, when they're all, was it the first? Like, I don't know, maybe it was on purpose, Greg Capullo drew them all with the same face, and they all looked like family of these black-haired boys.
They were doing a portrait, I think.
Yeah,
Because so they were all dressed up, and Damian didn't want to wear a tie.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, those first batch of issues of Snyder and Capullo are so good. I mean, he's got his extended family, too. Kate Kane, Stephanie Brown, Sean Paul Valley. But, like, the core unit, Barbara, Jason, Dick, Tim, Damian, and, of course, Alfred, that actually feels like a unit. Like,
oh, yeah.
You can make a sitcom around that easy. Because, like, everyone's got their own.
Why don't they do that instead of doing that, like, that powerless show and all these other random things they're doing?
You got me.
Bat Family Show.
Bat Family Show. It would have been so much fun, and it would have been, you know, humorous. But, like, you could also do, like, that grim vigilante crap if you really wanted to.
Oh, they would want to.
No, absolutely. but I think that's why I really enjoy James' run on Detective so much, is because he really understands the grasp of the Bat Family, and he understands the importance of, like, these characters and how they fit into the great dichotomy of it. Like, Stephanie Brown isn't just there because, ooh, spoiler, was popular back in the 90s. She's there because she serves a crucial function to other characters. Like, her and Tim Drake have this great relationship, and when Tim, you know, dies, or rather is taken by Mr. Oz, and everyone thinks he's dead, you still felt this pang of loss. I remember that issue where, like, Tim sacrifices himself. I was not prepared for it emotionally. Like,
I remember
something big was gonna happen, and James was hyping it up on Twitter, and it was making me so mad, because I was like, if you kill Tim Drake. We just had this conversation. Like, I had just interviewed him. We talked, like, for, like, 20 minutes about how great Tim Drake was. I'm like, if you kill him off, I'm going to lose my shit. When he was gone, like, you know, Stephanie Brown was there, despondent, but there to, like, you know, get their shit together, you know? It's like, hey, we still got a job to do and all this stuff, and this is what Tim would have wanted, and that's what's so special about it.
I like the fact that Stephanie has been both Robin and Batgirl. And I think this is very much due to her current use in continuity, and then also her run as Batgirl.
Mm-hmm.
But she's still a very popular Robin, even though she was only Robin for a couple months. And
it wasn't long.
It was very, very short. What was the name of that big, long series? Some City of... what was the name of that storyline she was Robin during?
Oh, I wasn't reading comics at that point.
You probably weren't.
Yeah.
It was right around when I was starting. But it was this big, long, like, 12-issue series. Oh, I don't remember now. Mm. But yeah, she was only around for a little while before she died in action, but it turned out that she was, like, in hiding and stuff. She went to, like, Africa or something. I don't know.
She had to catch some rays.
But she was not a super great Robin. She was a good Batgirl, and it was a well-done Batgirl series. It was written very wittily, very funny, very Whedon-esque dialogue by Brian Q. Miller.
Why wasn't she a good Robin, do you think?
I don't remember the details, but I remember that the reason that she died was not necessarily anyone's fault but her own.
Oh, no.
Well, she died in quotes, you know, not, yeah. you know. Yeah. She, but I don't remember why Tim stepped down and then she was like, well, I'll do it. And it was, yeah. she just wasn't necessarily prepared for the role.
I stopped reading comics for like, I don't know, 5 years. Tim Drake was wearing green and yellows and reds. And then all of a sudden I come back. Stephanie Brown's dead. She had been Robin and Tim's wearing this black, yellow, and red costume with like bat wings on the cape. And I'm like, where, how do, the hell did we get here? I think that little bit of time with Tim was might be my least favorite part for him. They were kind of phasing him out as Robin. Damian was coming up. And then the Morrison run nipped it in the bud. And before we knew it, Tim Drake was Red Robin, and he was dressed like Dick Grayson in Kingdom Come. I just didn't see how those things connected. I guess that shit took place in Countdown?
They had him as Red Robin. That was before Damien, though, right?
Well, no, it happened as because it all was precipitated by the return of Bruce Wayne. RIP, like, Batman dies, Dick Grayson becomes Batman, Damien becomes Robin, Tim becomes Red Robin.
I remember all
They changed everything.
I thought they had Red Robin before that.
Mm-mm.
War Games.
War Games.
That was the name of the storyline.
There we are. Nice to see you. War Games. Yeah, I didn't read. I still haven't read that one.
I remember it being very plotting.
Well, I mean, that was what Batman books were at that point. They were just doing annual events. Just
it was. It was like a long storyline.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Damian. Little dinky Damian. Because right now he's, you know, for being a character, like I said earlier, that people seem to not be able to connect with, DC's putting him in an awful lot of books. He's the leader of the Teen Titans. He's in Super Sons with Jonathan Kent, which I love. We both love that book. And then, of course, he pops up intermittently throughout the Bat books. Robin's kind of, like, moved out of, like, the Batcave. Robin's become kind of, like, his own character in the way that Nightwing did, which I think is a really interesting development. And I think that it had to have been a character like Damian Wayne who was so divisive to make that really happen.
I don't know anybody who dislikes him, like how you're talking about, because like we always do a little, you know, a little survey of asking people questions, and the one for this episode is what's your favorite Robin. We got a lot of responses of Damian.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's
people
refreshing.
Giving like reasons why they like Damian. He's a fun, interesting shit of a character.
He stirs the pot.
Yeah. He's, oh my god, I love him in Super Sons, partially because he's such a little shit, but he's also, you know, there's a heart underneath all that.
He sees the potential, because he's an analytical butthole, but he sees the potential in Jonathan Kent to be a great hero. Damian has the credit of being raised by Bruce Wayne, so he...
Well, before that, Talia al Ghul.
Well, Talia al Ghul's not a... I mean, she's a fucking monster, she killed her own son, but she raised Damian to be, like, this worldly... You know,
to be the successor to Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, Russ.
Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can keep going, but we've only got so much time to talk about Robin. One last question. Let's just get this out of the way. MJ, who is your favorite Robin of all time? Who do you like?
It's very difficult for me. I don't have like the emotional attachment that you do to Tim,
yeah.
Or even to Damian, because you do love Damian.
I
too.
Do. I think he's a great character.
I think it's funny that you love the character that usurped Tim.
Yeah,
you like probably as much as Tim, right?
It changes with my moods, which change often. So I can't make up my mind.
I don't know. I do love Dick Grayson. I mean, you can't not love him. He defined the character for so many years. And even though he's become a different character, that the essence of, you know, the Boy Wonder still stays with him.
Oh, no.
You know, there's no, like, even though he's Dick Grayson Nightwing, there's still that.
He's got that devilish grin leaping off of, you know, rooftops into concrete canyons, just like not giving a shit.
Yeah.
That's Robin in my mind.
Yeah. You love all the Robins, though.
I do. Well, I don't know anything about Stephanie Brown's turn as Robin, but people seem to like it.
It was a very short stint as Robin.
A short stint, but
very
short. But a legendary one, Justin.
That's what I think.
Well, then I guess let's dedicate this episode just for the sake of, you know, fairness to Stephanie Brown. We still love you. Now we're going to switch gears, do what we do every single week, which is to share our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week. All right, MJ, I'm going to have you kick us off. What's the first book for you this week?
All right, first one this week, Paper Girls number 16 from Image Comics, written by Brian K. Vaughan, art by Cliff Chang, colors by Matt Wilson, flats by D. Cuniff, and letters by Jared K. Fletcher. This is one of my favorite ongoing books. Super stoked to have it back. This is the first storyline of what's going to be, or the first issue of what's going to be the fourth storyline. And I'm really stoked to see what these girls are up to in their time-traveling escapades.
That sounds pretty cool.
What's your first one for the week?
Well, my first for this week is The Shadow Batman number 1 from Dynamite DC, not DC.
But that's, Dynamite. Yeah, that's interesting because Batman and the Shadow just wrapped ended.
I know, and it's written by Steve Orlando again. So Steve's taken over full writing duties for this book. I'm really excited for it because I just wanted to buy the Alex Ross cover. It's so gorgeous. It's got Batman.
This book had so many covers. It's a Dynamite book, so.
But this one really takes the cake. But I love the dichotomy between the two characters. One begat the other, obviously. I think that they fit really well. And if this became an ongoing series, I'd be perfectly happy with it. So yeah, The Shadow Batman, number 1 from Dynamite DC. My first pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
All right, my next one is another Image book, Slots number 1. Oh. Written and drawn by the great Dan Panosian. Letters by Pat Brisseau. I love Dan Panosian. I mean, like, a lot of people will associate him with his more, like, 90s art, because he's been an artist for a super long time.
Yeah.
But he's evolved into this, like, brushy, pulpy style, and he doesn't do interiors very much anymore. He does a lot of covers. Mm-hmm. But he does some like, various European comics now.
He did that Conan Red Sonja thing that Simone and Zub were writing.
I don't know, do you do interiors on it?
I think he did, yeah.
I don't know about that. But I've been very much looking forward to seeing him do insides of a comic book again. And this was one that he's writing and drawing. Really, really stoked to read it. What's your next one?
Well, I too am picking a book that is written by an artist or somebody that's commonly known as an artist.
A writer artist
or an artist writer, however you like it. Batman White Knight number 1 by Mr. Sean Murphy. Colors by Matt Hollingsworth. The whole premise, I'm still iffy on. I haven't really read too much about the book because I want to be surprised. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I've been doing lately. I've just been skipping synopses and not reading them at all and just reading the book and judging it based on the merits.
It makes for a good reading experience because you're not going in with expectations.
Yeah. So from what I can tell, it's like, what if the Joker was Batman?
Which, like you mentioned yesterday, Mark Miller kind of did in that awful miniseries Nemesis.
Yeah, it already happened. So I don't know. I guess DC greenlit this thing based on the merits of Sean Murphy doing it, because he's an amazing artist.
His art's pretty gorgeous. Yeah.
So I'm willing to give this thing the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to crack this thing open as soon as we're done here. Batman White Knight number 1 is my second pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
All right, my third pick this week is another Image book, because they got all the good stuff. Extremity number 7 by another writer artist. This one a local Chicagoan, Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah,
with colors by Mike Spicer and letters by Russ Wooten. Extremity is amazing. I'm still trying to get Jared to start it. He will soon.
I will.
It's another kind of Mad Maxian sort of apocalyptic fantasy thing, but the art is phenomenal, and it centers around this main character who was an artist in their little clan tribe thing, mm-hmm. but had her dominant hand cut off.
Wow.
So she has to figure out what to do with her life. As you know, their clan is warring with other clans and all this other crazy shit's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But what to do with her life now that she can't do the thing that she is driven to do in her heart. It's real good. Read Extremity. The first trade is out. This is the first issue of the following storyline. Mm-hmm. But yeah, read Extremity. It's phenomenal.
Great.
What is your third choice this week, Jared?
Third for me. We typically try to like recommend books that are affordable, and we typically chastise books for being expensive, but in this case, I am making a total exception. Thor: Heroes Return Omnibus Volume 1 hardcover from Marvel Comics.
Because Jared was into that post-Onslaught universe, apparently.
Well, look, it was post-Onslaught. It was the Heroes Return. It wasn't their reborn, weird Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld world. It was when they came back into the Marvel Universe. And when mm-hmm. Thor came back to the Marvel U, it was written by Dan Jurgens and the art was by John Romita Jr. And at that point, those were two of my all-time favorite creators.
So they're still your all-time creator.
They brought me into Thor. They're the characters that got me into Thor. Like, that shows my age. Like, everyone's like, it's Walt Simonson for me, for the older dudes, or, you know, J. Michael Straczynski for people who got in later. But for me, it was Jurgens and Romita. And I think that's the disconnect between me and you, because you're such a Jason Aaron buff. And you enjoy that run.
Oh, I was into Thor before Jason Aaron was in the title.
I know, but, like, it takes me longer to get into that run because, like, it's a little more somber.
Some of it is. Some of it's not. Some of it's, like, wild and crazy.
Oh, I know. It gets buck wild.
He's going to read some Jason Aaron Thor if I'm going to force him.
I have, and I'm going to continue. I will. But the Mighty Thor was, like, you know, big, bright, Kirby-esque craziness. It dealt with the fall of Asgard and the imprisonment of Odin, and it was just a really fun series. I really enjoyed it. So The Mighty Thor, Heroes Return Omnibus, Volume 1, hardcover, which retails at $125.
Which you can murder somebody with. It's a cement block.
So sock away some cash and pick this sucker up. I know I will. MJ, what's next for you?
The next one for me is another Image book.
No.
This one is Moonstruck number 3.
Goodness.
Which is written by Grace Ellis, art by Shay Bagel, with guest artist Kate Leth. She does like a page or two every issue.
Kate Leth is the best.
I love Kate Leth. Colors by Caitlin Quirk and letters by Clayton Cowles.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that the colorist's last name is Quirk, because it's a very little quirky little story.
Oh, how convenient.
With all of these like different magical characters.
Mm-hmm.
Just living in this town. The main character is a werewolf. It's very, very queer friendly, very diverse. It's my bread and butter, my favorite sort of thing. It's just cute and sweet, and it's such a happy little comic. I love it so much.
That's great.
Yeah. Like, what is your next pick, Jared?
Pick number 4 for me this week is Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica, number 1 from DC Comics and Archie. I'm looking forward to this based solely on the fact that it's got Mark and Draco and Paul Dini writing it. Who's illustrating this book?
Laura Braga.
What else has she done?
She has done a little bit of work on DC Bombshells. Mm-hmm. She's done just other random stuff.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I'm checking it out just because of the premise alone. Betty and Veronica are two of my favorite comics characters. The Archie Riverdale gang I just love them and have for years. But Harley and Ivy, I feel, are always at their best when they're written by Paul Dini. And even if it's only co-written and he's got 4 characters to manage instead of just the 2 dynamic, I'm still very intrigued by it. And the Amanda Connor cover is just hilarious.
I love the Hughes one too.
Yeah, the Hughes one.
They're both super cute though.
No, great artists, perfect picks for the covers. So yeah, Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica. Number 1's my next pick. MJ, what's your last one for us this week?
All right, my last one. Switching away from Image, hopping over to Marvel for Star Wars number 37.
All
right. The aforementioned Jason Aaron. This is his last issue on the title. Y'all know he's like my favorite comic writer, and I am really sad to see him leaving this book. But I'm glad it's on his own terms. He's the last few issues have all kind of been done in ones concentrating on specific characters. This one concentrates on something that he created, which is this is called the Scar Squadron, which is a bunch of kind of crack stormtroopers that are actually good, like stormtroopers that are good at their jobs.
Oh, so they like can hit their
apt, mark. Yes, yeah. Apt, all right, yes, cool. Not like good, like not evil. No, they're pretty badass. And it's nice to actually see stormtroopers that are, you know,
competent.
Yes. Yes, it is very nice to see. And he, as always, puts his own great
spin on things.
I'm really bummed he's leaving this book. But yeah. Kieran Gillen's jumping on. You know, he had an amazing run on Darth Vader, so this ain't gonna be bad. I'm going to miss Jason Aaron on this book. There's also, at the end, is a little short that he co-wrote with his son, Dash, that is a continuation of the little shorts that are narrated by Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, very cool.
And that's got art by Andrea Sorrentino. And then the first chunk is Salvador La Roca again. Go out and pick this up and weep with me over the loss of Mr. Aaron.
No.
What's your last pick for the week, Jared?
My last pick is the same book I'm going to be reviewing. It's Punisher, the Platoon, number 1, by Garth Ennis and
Goran Parlov.
Goran Parlov, also colored by Jordi Belair. I'm kind of anxious to get talking about this, so let's just talk about it.
All right. All right, Jared, what is your elevator pitch for Punisher Platoon number 1?
All right, well, it boils down to this. Garth Ennis, the Vietnam War, Frank Castle.
Enough said.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide to read this book?
I enjoyed Ennis's Punisher run with the late Steve Dillon, and even though it's a squirrely book, there are bits of his Fury miniseries with Derek Robertson that harkened back to his Hitman Preacher days, which I liked. I don't know if it's good, but I did enjoy it. I thought it was an interesting read. And while I'm on the record for actively disliking the character, Punisher, the Platoon, features art by Goran Parlov and Jordi Belair, so the pros that supported reading this vastly outweighed the cons.
What did you love about it?
Well, I didn't love it.
Oh.
It's fine. It's not... anyway. Ennis's reverence for the armed services usually merits a relatively grounded read compared to his other Gonzo stuff, like Six Pack and Dog Molder. Yeah. But the Platoon is definitely a very detailed book when it comes to the army and its function. A lot like his other war stuff, like Dreaming Eagles and stuff. He gets... Like, he does his research, and it's all...
He's like a military history buff.
Oh, he's a buff. And things get pretty arid as Ennis shows off his technical acumen during the bits where Frank Castle becomes acclimated with the members of his squad, but there's enough characterization within that platoon to get you through the issue, although some of that technical jargon weighs the story down quite a bit. Goran Parlov renders the story with a similar attention to detail. He also did his research for this book, and it totally shows... this is war, and the artist depicts the issue's one act of horror with a straight-faced, this is happening, look at it, kind of zeal. Jordi Belair gets all the earth tones down and washes them out to resemble a fading snapshot. Punisher the Platoon is a great-looking book, and the art alone may keep me reading it until its conclusion, but I don't know yet.
I loved their Fury miniseries. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe you didn't, but I did. Was there anything you didn't like?
Well... the Platoon is a third and fourth and fifth person account of the Punisher's Vietnam days before he became the Punisher, as related back and forth by surviving members of the eponymous Platoon and an off-panel character who somehow has a vested interest in Frank Castle's life and is attempting to document it. So that seems like a good premise, right? But as such, Frank Castle's lent this larger-than-life prestige that I don't think he deserves fucking at all. Since we're only ever told about the character, we never once get the feeling of what kind of man Frank Castle might have been before his life went to shit. I guess you have to infer stories from other places, which kind of seems antithetical to the point. He's depicted as this typical stoic, broad-shouldered man's man that Ennis loves to emulate in his stories. So really, the Punisher could have been swapped out for any number of characters, or could have been an entirely new character made up from parts of Ennis's id, and it wouldn't have made a damn bit of difference. Also, without spoiling too much, the story jumps to another set of characters who, while they fit into the story thematically, considering the era we're dealing with here, they feel like they walked in from a completely different story. And I'm sure the threads will pull together as the series progresses, but for right now, I can't help but feel that this would have been a better story served by a complete original graphic novel instead of a miniseries.
Well, who would you recommend this book to and why?
NS enthusiasts who have a tolerance built up for the writer's late career indulgences, because they are many. Oddballs who love the aesthetic of war stories, Goran Parlov fans, this is definitely niche reading, in spite of the much-hyped Punisher TV series coming down the pipeline. So I'm not sure what Marvel was aiming for with this.
All right, well, what's your score for Punisher Platoon number 1?
It ain't a terrible book. It ain't a great book. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
All right.
All right, MJ, what are you reviewing for us this week?
I'm doing one of your picks, which is Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica, number 1.
Oh, okay then. Well, why don't you give us the elevator pitch?
Well, the title says it all. Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica. Plus, like you mentioned before, it's co-written by Harley's famed co-creator himself, Paul Dini.
Why did you decide to read this book?
Well, I have a great love for both Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, even if I'm not a fan of where the characters have been taken the last 5 years or so, especially in regards to motion pictures. But Paul Dini co-penning a crossover with Betty and Veronica, that's an automatic read for me.
Yeah.
I mean, the Harley Quinn 25th anniversary issue he contributed to from, like, last month, it proved he hasn't lost his grasp on either Harley or Ivy. So, yeah.
What did you love about it?
Well, I love the interplay between Harley and Ivy, and I love the there's this Lodge University contrivance that brings the duo to Riverdale in general, and I love the subtle nod that that had to another certain high-profile real estate mogul who ran a bogus business school.
Yeah, I get you. Was there anything about it you didn't like?
Well,
oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It felt like the story balance was very Riverdale-heavy, probably simply because of more Riverdale characters being present there.
Sure.
And I would have preferred... have your Gotham representation to at least balance it out somehow. A lot of the Riverdale characters and interactions feel they fall a little flat. Like, there's cattiness between Betty and Veronica that I don't know is called for. There's conversations between Archie and Jughead, just eh. And I can't help but feel that bringing in Mark Waid, who's been bringing this modern nuance and heart to the Archie crew in their main series, might have helped in this regard a bunch. Additionally, I didn't like how all the high school students, all the ladies are all drawn, dressed, and coiffed like 27-year-olds. And it makes a sort of heroic ideal sense for Harley and Ivy to have hair and boobs and butts that totally defy gravity. But Betty and Veronica and Midge should look like humans. Yeah. Specifically, 17-year-old humans.
Yeah, this isn't like Ty Templeton and Dan Parent.
Yeah, and they don't. It's odd to not have this, like, any sort of visual contrasting difference between these small-town high school girls and va-va-voom supervillains, you know?
Who would you recommend this book to and why?
It is an easy enough read, so I'd recommend it to most who like either of the groups in question in the crossover, with the caveat not to expect anything crazy good.
Nice. Well, what would you give Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica number one?
Give it a 6.5 out of 10.
I see. Every week we take to social media to ask you, our listeners, the pressing questions on our minds. And this week's question, what is your favorite incarnation of Robin? And we asked, and you answered. MJ, take it away.
All right. So, at Goats of Doom on Twitter replied, Damian, Dick, Carrie, Tim, Jason, in that order. We didn't mention Carrie.
That's
but
true.
She is out of continuity.
That's true.
So,
there's so many Robins out of continuity.
Yes,
good
yes,
Lord.
Yes.
Well, over on Facebook, Alan Kistler said, Tim, Dick is great, but Robin was just his prologue to being Nightwing.
And Jeremy Hashat on Twitter said, Damian, as long as Grant Morrison is writing him, I disagree and say Tomasi is allowed in there too.
Well, Jesse Ian Rubenfeld on Facebook said, okay, I'm leaving out my obvious choice of Tim Drake, and while I know I'm probably going to get some flack for even putting this guy at all close to my top, I'm going to say it anyway. Thomas Wayne, a.k.a. Robin 3000. And he provided an image of the comic. This was a book, Robin 3000, illustrated by P. Craig Russell. It looks gorgeous. But yeah, he's got a gun.
That's weird. Marston Dawn, who is at That Comic Girl on Twitter, said, my favorite Robin is definitely Damian Wayne, but if I had to choose between my favorite Bat Kid, it's a tie between Jason Todd and Dick Grayson.
Well, Gene Ha over on Facebook said, Carrie Kelly. So there you go. I was 16 when The Dark Knight Returns hit the shops. She was the first Robin that felt like a real teenager to me. And then my friend Robin underneath said, yes, and Jean liked it. So that was like my favorite Facebook moment last night. I enjoyed it.
All right. Diana McCallum, who's at Words of Diana on Twitter, replied with, Tim Drake for life. Jeffrey S. Mueller, who's on Twitter as The Mighty Jerd, posted a picture of Carrie Kelly getting all up in costume with the words forever and always.
Well, Mike DeVivo said, Damian currently only because Tomasi and Gleason poured so much love into the character and his interactions with Dick and Bruce that you can't help but fall in love with the dude. He's absolutely right.
And Joshua S., who's on Twitter as Darth_awesome, said, Carrie Kelly for life. And Paul Story, who's on Twitter as Storyville, said, I love the original, assumingly meaning Dick, but Tim Drake is pretty awesome.
And finally, Daniel Kibblesmith over on Facebook said, Batman, the animated series, when he can't believe Batman has never seen It's a Wonderful Life and makes him watch it, is peak Robin for me. That's awesome.
Personally, peak Robin for me, Lego Batman Robin.
Lego Batman Robin?
Yeah. Michael Cera, ripping the pants off.
Peak Robin for me, as far as tolerance is concerned, is Chris O'Donnell in Batman and Robin. I'm going solo. Yeah, go do that, guy. That's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 38-episode archive over on iTunes. Rate and subscribe, tell us how we're doing. Or search Casual Wednesdays over at doomrocket.com. Special thanks to Tim Seeley for taking the time to talk with us. Tim will be at the New York Comic Con this weekend at the Javits Center in New York City. Go to newyorkcomiccon.com for more info. And make sure to keep an eye out this November for his latest book from Vertigo, Imaginary Fiends, with artist Stephen Molnar. Go to vertigocomics.com/comics/imaginaryfiends2017 for more. And since you're already on the internet, it seems, look us up on Twitter while you're at it. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
At @MollyJane_K.
Thank you, NJ, very much. And that's it. So until Damian Wayne fulfills his destiny as some spike-knuckled antichrist-punching maniac, I'm Jared, that's MJ, and from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day.